Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, race fans. How the hell are you? Steve Big Sweat Bill Meyer here, hosting another episode of that highly rated internet radio program, Racing with Big Sweat. Glad y'all tuned in with us tonight. Hope you enjoy the show. We've got a couple of championship winning drivers scheduled to be in the studio tonight. It's that time of the year, and we want to talk to the champions, the local short track racers who make up the backbone of racing across the country. If you know of somebody that you think should be on the show that deserves a shout out or a little recognition, just send me a message, either a personal message or message me at my Facebook groups, Racing with Big Sweat or NASCAR and Other Racing. You can find me at both of those. So let me know if you know somebody, and we'll sure get them on. I just walked in, been outside. Let me see who else is here today. How about my producer, the man about town, the man that makes all this possible, Mr. CJ Sports. You there, CJ?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Glad to be here tonight. Looking forward to hearing from two champions. Very excited about this tonight.
Definitely so. Definitely so. It's people we like to talk to and like to talk about here on Racing with Big Sweat. Let me see if my partner with crime is here, my co-host from down Mississippi way, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Chris Yellow Caution Flag Creighton.
Steve Bill Meyer, how you doing, crew chief? How you doing, Mr. CJ Sports?
Oh, I'm just like an old man's balls in a pair of boxer shorts. I'm just hanging out. How about you?
Lord, you just reminded me of my grandfather. Amen, hallelujah, and God bless his soul.
What's happening down Mississippi way these days?
Well, I tell you, it's the 22nd annual Coors Light Fall Classic. Mr. Charles Thrash and family put on the last race of the year over here at Wynot Motorsports Park. Kind of goes back to back in the old day when it was Wynot Raceway. That's where the race originated in 1995. There's only been two three-time winners, and that's our local hero, Iron Mike Bolin, and Jimbo McDuffie have both won that race three times. It's a big super late model race. Boy, we've got them all down here. Kyle Beard, Billy Moyer Jr., Jared Landers, you name it. They're down here for this weekend's race. It's going to be a big one, $15,000 to win a 100-lap race. So come on out and support the race, support classes with your race car, and we'll have ourselves a great time this weekend. And why not Motorsports Park, the House of Hook?
That's a right nice payout for a 100-lap race, I tell you.
Yes, sir, it is. And let me tell you, them boys know how to get it. This is the end of the year. They bring their best this week.
Well, I'm trying to get a message to one of our guests, sending the call-in number. Keep talking while I'm typing.
Yeah, that's right. Tonight's guest, we're going to have Dallas Mazingo, the Outlaw Street Stock driver. He's been driving a pickup truck here for about 3 years now. He cashed in this year on a track championship, but I tell you, if you'd asked him in mid-season, was he going to get it? And I think he was kind of worried. He had a tough season there, broke a few weeks in a row, but got some wins, and all in all, had a pretty decent year to win the championship. It was kind of a short season this year at Hattiesburg Speedway. Most of the time, there's about 30 races run. I think maybe this year was probably half of that. So looking for a better year in 2017, but to have a driver like Dallas Mazingo, with the type of competition, the Outlaw Street Stock class, the growing class that's not as probably as famed as the Neesmith Street Stocks, but they have their own character cars, and I think they're really good for the state of Mississippi with the class that they're racing in. And I seen Dallas picked him up a late model We're going to have to talk to him about that here tonight, because I definitely hope to see him around in the Outlaw Street Stocks again next year. He's kind of an ambassador for that class right there. And Mr. Sylvester is going to be on again this evening, and be looking forward to talking to him. And I guess I'm kind of figuring he's got him a championship to talk about as well, and he's a second or third time guest as well, along with Dallas. So we get to talk to two guys tonight that we know a lot about, and just privileged to be on the show. And it's Talladega weekend, guys. I know some of you are Dega bound. You guys go out there, have yourself a good time, and get ready for some plate racing this weekend.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a show down there for sure. What are your thoughts about Talladega? Who looks good to you?
I'm putting my money on Alex Bowman this weekend. I know. You always want to go with the rookie, and because, you know, this comes to the track where it's anybody's shot. And Alex is going to prove to us this weekend, and I'm not saying that he can't disprove himself, but he can really prove himself this weekend. If he keeps that 88 out of trouble and he stays hooked up with Chase Elliott and Jimmy Johnson, I expect Alex Bowman to be a threat there at the end of the race. The kid's come a long way. I think, you know, we've probably compared this to maybe Eric Amarola stepping in Jimmy Johnson's car during some practice times and stuff like that. Man, this is an opportunity of a lifetime for Alex Bowman. This is beyond what Landon Castle or any of them ever had an opportunity of doing. I think a lot of us in NASCAR have wanted to see a guy just be given a shot in a big name, you know, in a big name ride, and this is Alex Bowman's chance to prove whether or not, you know, he's got what it takes to stick around. So I expect the Fords to be quick, and Brad Keselowski, I tell you, I think that kid's won Talladega more in the last 7 years than I think anybody else. So watch that number two Miller Lite Ford.
Yeah, I believe it was last year. He had to have a victory to get in, and he pulled it off. So I'm kind of expecting the same thing from him this year.
Yeah, he got his first win ever there in 2009. And so, you know, he's always been a threat, and I think he's won a few of the nationwide races as well along the year. So Keselowski's turned into a top-notch driver. I know a lot of people questioned him at first and kind of wondered if, you know, his championship was just a fluke. By no means do I think the captain would have somebody at the wheel of that car if he didn't think they were capable of winning week in, week out. So Ford fans, don't take your hats off just too quick. I think maybe they still got something to show here at the end of the chase.
Yeah, they definitely proved they're one of the consistently top teams week in and week out, that Penske Racing Organization bunch. They got it going on with their two drivers, Brian Blaney.
Yes, definitely. And I love to see the youth movement going on right now. And, you know, I guess I could take both of y'all's take on this. I listened to a little bit of the show a few days ago, Rubbin' is Racing, and I was waiting for y'all to talk about it, but I had to go maybe before y'all did. They're discussing now limiting cup drivers. And when I read that article, I thought, my goodness, Steve, CJ Sports, they're listening to our show, because that's exactly what we've talked about, how there's this younger breed of drivers. They already have a developed fan base, and it's time for them to have that kind of attention. And to hear it coming from the big wigs in NASCAR, I really think that we're going to see a change coming here. And you know, I don't want to limit ourselves to what we talk about in racing, because, like you know, it's all tied in together some way or another. It'll be really nice to talk about some of these kids and leave the cup drivers to be in the famous cup drivers. You know, it kind of dilutes the series, in my opinion, to have a cup driver winning every weekend in one of these lower divisions.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I'm one of those, I don't believe in limiting any driver. If he wants to race, let him race. And if he beats you,
well, you know,
he
it's interesting
you.
That you say that, Steve, because I worked for a promoter who told me a long time ago when I first got in, in this business, he said, look, he said, I don't want to penalize a driver because he wins. And, you know, when you really take to heart what he says there, it's true. Sometimes, you know, a driver's only going to win so long, and then it's going to be somebody else's turn. So no matter what, there's always going to be somebody winning. And the promoter just didn't believe that, you know, it was the place of the track promoter to penalize a driver because he was winning. Let somebody else build something big enough or run fast enough to run him down, because that kind of adds to the excitement when somebody finally does run him down. But there again, I can see it from the other side where, you know, a lot of times it's the Kyle Busch show in the Nationwide Series, and it's not been the Busch Series for a long time. But I think over the last 10 years, they've never really quite shook the Busch Series, because Kyle Busch is just unbeatable when he gets into a car. It'll probably be called the Busch Rule. When this is all said and done, it'll be called the Busch Rule because of the success that Kyle's had in both the other series.
Do you think it would diminish a driver's victory if he won knowing that he wasn't allowed to race against all the top drivers, that the top drivers had been excluded from what he had been racing in? Do you think that would diminish his accomplished?
In a way, I understand what you're saying, Steve, because in order to be the best, you got to beat the best. I think a lot of this is coming down to sponsorship. I think a lot of this has to do with a rebranding of NASCAR. They're thinking deeper than what we've been able to conversate on the radio and stuff. I really feel that NASCAR is seeing the early warning signs. They do not want to fall apart like IndyCar. They don't want to be in that kind of controversy like Tony George and all that. I know y'all remember that back in the 90s. I really think that the Frances have owned this operation for a really long time, and though Brian France has been questioned many times before, he's also made a product work better. Now, I've argued many times that, you know, you can't really read into the, well, they only got a 2.2 on the viewer rate, because these days there's so many different ways for people to actually follow the race. And it used to be the only way that you could follow the race was by TV or radio.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep up with the average fan now. And being that most races are snoozers these days, lack of cautions, a lack of excitement, people are just, you know, they're doing their daily thing and they're checking back on Twitter and they're catching the updates and stuff like that. So I don't think that there's any less viewership. I think that there's less fans sitting down at a TV these days watching the event. So that means that NASCAR's got to think about the sponsorship side, because, well, they feel like the sponsors feel like they're not getting what they're supposed to get out of it. How are you going to have a big-time sponsor a kid that they've never even heard of, and those guys feel confident that they're making a good investment? We're talking about investment money here with advertisement. And so I believe that this move is more, in effect, to, you know, give sponsors a little bit cheaper avenue to go down and to possibly grow their operation, kind of similar to what 5-Hour Energy did when they took the chance for Clint Bowyer. People realize that was a 10-race deal with 5-Hour Energy, and they've stuck with him for this long, and now they're going to go to Erik Jones. So I think with Nationwide drivers able to go out and compete against themselves, you're going to have that guy who's winning. You're going to have that sponsor who wasn't ready to go to Cup yet. They wanted to protect their investment, and that's going to build sponsorships into the lower series. What do you think about that, Steve?
Yeah, I think it'll, you know, it's going to it help open seats up for drivers, but a lot of these sponsorship deals that the Cup guys get for Nationwide and Camp and World Trucks are dependent on the driver running X amount of races for that sponsor, and then the leftover races, the team gets to choose one of their young drivers, one of their up-and-coming drivers, to put in the car and give them a shot. I see the good and the bad in this deal, but
isn't that kind of business as usual, though, Steve? Because, I mean, you go back to Davey Allison, 1986. Nobody had heard of Davey. Everybody knew who Bobby was, but then all of a sudden he got a ride into the number 12 Budweiser. Was it? It was Neil Bonnet, right? Neil Bonnet was in that car, yeah. And he got hurt at Pocono or something like that. So at Talladega, they picked Davey Allison to get in that car, and I'm sure that it had something connected to who you know at that time.
Yeah, definitely so. Just, you know, a case of being in the right place at the right time more than anything else.
So, you know, I think that you're always going to have that friendship. Mark Martin picked out who? Joey Logano and a few others, too, throughout the years. And yeah, it's interesting. Ken Schrader goes to a lot of these dirt tracks and all, and it's been a long time since we heard Ken Schrader kind of get behind the driver and say, you know, that this one's going to be the next guy, or even Kenny. And, you know, you kind of hope that they're going out there trying to scout the next talent.
Yeah, Schrader's one of those. He's always, you know, he's always at the racetrack, so he's always viewing new talent and different talent. So you kind of look for him to bring somebody along and put in his cars that has the abilities. I got to work with Kenny. He's a hell of a guy to work with, a world of fun, and he's a great race car driver on any surface. I mean, you just strap him in any kind of car on any kind of surface, and he's quite capable of beating you that night.
Definitely a longtime driver, and he's going to be in Milton, Florida next weekend, racing at Southern Raceway. So if you guys are around the Pensacola area, go down there and check out Kenny Schrader. A guy by the name of Ryan Fowler actually told him that he wasn't going to win the race next weekend, that Ryan was going to take on the money. So building up a little rivalry down there. And I tell you, we watched one of our boys, our homegrown, Greg Hollinsworth, outran Kenny Schrader at the first of the year at Magnolia Motor Speedway back in February at the Frostbuster.
Yeah. I tell you, nothing like a little rivalry to get things stirred up.
Well, you know, sometimes it stirs on people's Fruit Loops, but they'll get over it. And that's kind of the excitement that I think a lot of the sport's missing, especially in the upper sport. There's so much diversity right now in racing, and so many different kinds of racing. I think NASCAR's always been set apart because it was the good old boy sport. And, you know, as they've kind of gotten away from that, I think that they're in a totally new transition phase where they're really going to have to go out and market themselves to new fans. We can speak about how great racing is all we want to, but I feel as they get into the marketing and they get more games out and stuff like that NASCAR will be just fine. But I'm glad to see that they're continuously trying to evolve into a better product.
Yeah, Cup racing is really starting to evolve right now with drivers like, Jeff Gordon retiring, Tony Stewart calling it a career at the end of this year, other drivers, Junior and Jimmy Johnson hitting into their 40s and wondering how much longer they're going to run. But there's so many young drivers waiting in the wings for a quality seat. Look at these guys that Joe Gibbs Racing has lined up, the young talent that they've got under their umbrella.
Right. Look at Todd Gillian.
They definitely don't have enough seats to go around for all the drivers that they've got. So they're having to do situations like Eric Jones and kind of farming them out to Furniture Row and things like that. I think it's going to make a big change in the sport here in the next few years.
You brought up a good point there too, Steve. It seems to be that TRDs put all their eggs in one basket. Could that be harmful down the road? I mean, we watched Ford for years put out a lot of good drivers in the beginning series, only to see them jump ship to go to Cup. Is this something that TRD needs to be worried about?
I think it's just going to be a case of, if a seat opens up, you know, you got to jump on it. You got to take it. If you're a young driver, and even if it's not a team in your brand or in your one of your teammates that the seat opens up in, you got to consider taking it.
Right.
Because, like I said, with the amount of talent that's out there waiting on the limited number of seats that are available, you know, you can't pass up an opportunity. You never know when you might get another one.
Right. And where did this William Byron kid come from? I mean, I think
yeah.
it was June before I realized, wow, who is this kid? And he come on about as quick as Eric Jones. And he took the right opportunity. And that's a Toyota driver that, you know, didn't make it past the Craftsman Trucks or the Camping World Truck Series before he was already picked up by another organization. I know how bad Ford hurt when Jeff Gordon pulled what he pulled and went to Chevy. I feel like something's going to happen with TRD, and they're going to, you know, that kind of thing just happens in racing. That's just the way it is. And so one of these drivers that's coming out of this TRD program, they're going to be the next big thing. And I don't know who it is. Maybe it's Eric Jones. Maybe it's William Byron. Maybe it's Daniel Suarez.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of quality drivers out there. It's just, and some of them, you kind of, you know, like you said, you wonder where did they come from. Alex Bowman is a, you know, good example of that. Alex Bowman was pretty much under the radar until they dropped him in Dale Jr.'s car, and he's done
right.
very good job.
And, you know, so many times go ahead, Steve, sorry.
Go ahead.
It was so many times, I think that kids, just with Bowman, he took the best ride that he could get with Tommy Baldwin. And I thought to myself, well, we won't see Bowman anymore. And the reason why I say that is because these guys jump too fast and they wind up in a non-competitive ride. And I love Tommy Baldwin racing, but there's really only about three tracks where Tommy can compete at. The rest of the time he's outrun by money. And so when Alex went over there to that team, I thought, well, you know, it's kind of a make it or break it for him. I've watched Landon Castle do the same thing, and he never really turned out. And he's been a great driver over at Front Row, but, you know, he kind of made that jump too quick and got out the reins of Hendrick, and it cost him. And so, you know, it kind of worries me when a driver – tries to move too fast. Jeb Bush, another, Jeb Bush. Jeb Burton. Too much politics, man. Jeb Bush
yeah,
is a butler. Jeez. Sorry about that, guys. Give me one second.
Yeah, but the flip side of that coin is you've got these young drivers that are looking for a shot. And they have to take, I hate to use the term, but they have to take that lower class ride just to get an opportunity to prove themselves. And the thing is, even if you're with a low-funded team, you're in the garage area every race with everybody else. You're getting noticed. The people whose opinions really matter, the car owners and crew chiefs and stuff, they're watching you, and they're sharp enough to know to see whether you're limited by your ability or you're limited by your equipment. And that's the thing, you know, you pretty much got to take any kind of ride you can get, you know, just to get your face out in the garage, to get your name out there, to let people know you're a capable driver. And when the opportunity comes, you have to prove it. And I think that's the impetus behind a lot of these drivers settling for not a top-notch ride, just to get the experience and just to get themselves out there.
Great point, Steve, definitely. And I can see it from that side as well. Chris Buescher, you know, he put himself in a great position. And, you know, with Greg Biffle's career, up in Wonders. You kind of wonder if there's going to be a change at Roush Racing, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. I had a lot of go with him when he first come out, and you know, it's just, I think his time is limited, and Trevor, you know, he shows spots of brilliance every now and then, but the one thing about Roush, I've always known about Roush, he doesn't like wrecked race cars, and he's got quite a few of them on his hand with Ricky and Trevor.
Well, that's true, but wrecked race cars isn't the only problem Roush Fenway's got. You know, they've got quite a few internal problems they need to get handled before they'll be competitive again.
Do you think his time is running out with Stuart Haas on the way? Is Roush's time running out?
I don't think it's running out. I just think they need to do something to right that ship. They need to get that team competitive again. And
The last time we had this conversation, it was about Michael Waltrip Racing. And so quickly, sponsorship, this is a sponsorship-driven sport. And I think on my take of this is Roush is really, this could be the last days of Roush Fenway Racing.
Yeah, Jack will run a while with no sponsorship, but he's not going to run long. I mean, they need to produce on all ends to keep that team afloat.
I agree.
Mr. CJ Sports, what do you think about this? Don't everybody talk at once.
Mr. Producer. he doesn't kick back over there.
I'm doing 20 things at once. Obviously it's a sponsor-driven sport, like you guys said. And I agree with Steve. You know, there's quite a few issues over at Roush Fenway. I can remember once upon a time with Carl Edwards and Greg Biffle and even Kurt Busch, that Roush Fenway was one of those teams that you feared that at any given weekend they would win a race and, you know, talks of winning the championship. I know that Greg Biffle was on the verge of winning the championship a couple years over there at Roush Fenway. And all of a sudden, you can't get talented drivers for, I'm not trying to say that Ricky Stenhouse and Trevor Bayne have no talent. I mean, Trevor Bayne has won the Daytona 500. But you're not getting that same quality that once upon a time that Roush Fenway was getting, and there's a reason for it. And I agree with Steve. Things have got to change. There's got to be something that the Cat in the Hat's got to do to turn that program around before sponsorship becomes an issue, and you end up being one of those teams that are only able to sign the Alex Bowmans and the driver, the Chris Bushers and stuff. So, you know, something's got to happen.
Yeah, definitely. The age of these guys is only going up. Ryan Newman, Matt Kenseth. I mean, in the next 5 years, if we could see a totally different sport in the upper division. If we had a stat, man, we'd look at the guys who are either pushing 40 or at 40. Remember, Dale Earnhardt died at 49, but he was not as competitive. Not too long after Gordon come in, he never won another championship after Gordon come in. So I think from 98 to 2000, or maybe it was 90, right after he won the Daytona 500, it was kind of some tough years there for Dale. And we're kind of seeing it, you know, it's like the quarterbacks in the NFL. They're great quarterbacks until they hit the age 40. When they hit the age 40, something happens, and it's mother time. And when you're racing against guys who are 20 years old and a lot more athletic and can hit that gym harder, they underestimate the athletic side of the sport so much because they've never been involved in it. But if people really knew the strenuous amount of heat and exhaustion that can go into these drivers from concentrating for 400 miles, it's pretty breathtaking. I've heard some drivers say they lose up to 15 pounds.
Yeah, and this weekend at Talladega is going to be a prime example. You've got drivers that, yeah, it's kind of an easy race just turning laps out there on a big 2.5 mile super speedway, but at the same time, it's mentally demanding. It really requires all your concentration, you know, for the whole race, lap after lap after lap. You're analyzing things that are going on with your car and with the other cars you're racing.
Right.
And how people are reacting, who's hooking up together, who you're going to hook up with at the end of the race.
Right.
It's just,
yeah, I think I've heard the analogy on this one, Steve. When they show up at Talladega for the first time, they go out there for practice, they're like, oh, wow, 180 miles an hour is not that bad on this open freeway. But the moment you get the cars out on the track and they're side by side, 180 miles an hour is super fast when you have somebody 2 inches off the side of your bumper and 2 inches to your left. It definitely adds into the excitement. I love plate racing. I know a lot of these older guys are getting, you know, they're kind of weary of plate racing because of the head injuries and stuff. And going to be kind of interesting to see there's not some changes to, you know, how plate racing is.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, Jeff Gordon, Tony Stewart, I mean, a lot of the big-name drivers, Ryan Newman, they will publicly denounce these restrictor plate racing tracks. And you know, these guys have never raced without a restrictor plate, so they don't really know what they're asking for at going 225 miles an hour. And these cars, with the engineers they have, can probably go faster than that. So, you know, I'm not open for letting these cars wide open either. But it does seem to be a fashion that the older drivers don't really like going to the plate races, and they're not ashamed to say it publicly, even though it's the fan favorite. You know, it's really the fan favorite.
Yeah, you know, the problem these drivers run into is, yeah, it seems easy to be out there running 180 mile an hour until something happens, and you just have no reaction time whatsoever.
Right.
I mean, as soon as it happens, even if it happens ahead of you, as soon as it happens, you're right on top of it. And
I don't care how many bolts are in those fence, sir. If those cars are going 235 miles an hour at Talladega, eventually one of those race cars is going to wind up in the grandstands. And, I mean, you know, you see the aerodynamics. You've seen what can happen in an Indy car, and these are big old catch fences. And they can only hold so much. And I think it's just unthinkable to think of taking the restrictor plate off the cars. But, you know, you also have to wonder if there's something else that they have to do to prevent the driver, to keep the driver safer.
Yeah, you know, you hear a lot of fans say, take the restrictor plates off, let them run and everything. Well, yeah, you could do that, but you would have to have the race on closed circuit television. You just couldn't put the fans in the grandstands with that level of danger, the way these cars get airborne.
Right.
And the way they won't stay on the track without their fins and roof flaps and everything else, still, you turn one of these cars around at 200 miles an hour, it's going to lift off. I mean, it's just...
Look at Kyle Larson at Daytona a couple of years ago. That was, you know, Kyle Larson took the whole backside of the fence out. I mean, it was amazing somebody didn't get killed. When you add the level of excitement with the speed and the side-by-side, eventually something's going to give and somebody will get hurt on the other side. And like you said, I mean, nobody wants to watch the race at Talladega on TV. People want to be there. They want to be a part of that experience.
Yeah, you look at, you know, how far that tire flew up into the grandstands that came off in the Kyle Larson wreck. Excuse me. I mean, how far are you going to have to push the grandstands back to make it safe for the fan to sit in the grandstand and watch these cars run these incredible speeds?
Right. Another great point. I mean, you know, there's old film of Stanley Smith going over the wall at or Jimmy Means, one or the other, going over the wall at Talladega. Now there's a whole track outside of the track, and it's for personnel to go completely around that racetrack, and it's double catch fence in some places, and I know it's a full catch fence in one with a rail on the other side. But there's probably about 12-foot difference now between where you used to be right on the track. Now you're about 12-foot from the track.
Yeah, you've got to take fan safety in consideration nowadays more than anything because, the cars have the ability to get upside down and get airborne even on the mile-and-a-half tracks. It's just... It all depends on which way you turn and which way you're heading. So, I'm sure it's a problem that NASCAR keeps on the back burner and is constantly addressing and constantly looking for ways to improve the fan experience more than anything else.
Well, the cars are safe, and we know that. The G-forces, the amount of G-forces that some of these higher-end cars have taken the soft wall, the way the cars are built now, more center into the car instead of right there up against the door. All these precautionary actions have saved the lives of drivers. And just like every other sport and anything else, as time goes along, safety becomes more and more of an issue. And it's definitely always something that I think NASCAR is well aware of. That's why they've been successful over the years. I see it coming down in the short track racing too. Just about every day you see somebody selling a used Hans device because they got a better one, and that's as long as you put in your safety first, you expect the danger that you're signing up for, but you're not putting yourself at anything that you didn't sign up for. Gloves and Hans devices and all the proper safety equipment is there for a reason.
Yeah, it is, and it's an area you just don't skimp on. I mean, safety should be any race car driver's number one priority in his car, is to make himself safe, because you just never know what's going to happen at any given moment. So it's well worth spending the money on to get yourself in a safe position and eliminate that variable, not take that chance on getting hurt. If it comes down to needing a new Hans device or a new carburetor, you know what you need to do. The carburetor becomes second.
Right. Always. Yeah, because we want the drivers and we want this sport around a long time, and that's you're watching football right now, and they're already kind of worried because viewership's been down, and they don't know what the real cause is. They don't know if it's the Trump effect or if it's the kneeling for the national anthem. They really don't have an explanation for it. And when you have a big sport like that it kind of reminds you of NASCAR. There was nothing wrong for a while, then all of a sudden things just started happening. And what we seen in Charlotte was, that should be eye-opener right there. And I understand that North Carolina was in a hurricane watch through most of the weekend and actually got a lot of flooding and all. And our hearts go out to everybody on the East Coast that were victims of Hurricane Matthew. But it was kind of sad to see such few folks at that race at Charlotte. And it was, a two-race day, and you kind of just expected a little bit more of a crowd there.
Yeah, that was a bit of a sad showing, really, for Charlotte and for NASCAR as a whole. That Charlotte is the home track for the vast majority of the teams. They're all based in the Charlotte-Mooresville area, and you've got family and friends and coworkers and everybody there, and like you said, it just looked like nobody showed up.
Yeah, well, Charlotte's a Charlotte's a big town. You would expect it at least the town to show up. And I think, you know, with Alabama, they just put out a thing, show up to Talladega. The 70% of the crowd comes from out of state, you know, and I think it's really more than that. So and we always say support your local track. I guess if it's a big track, support it too, huh, Steve?
Yeah, support them all. Don't, you know, differentiate between the big time and the local short track. I mean, support racing as a whole, because we don't want this to disappear. We want racing to stay strong, you know, you know, beyond our lifetime. You know, this is something I want my kids to be able to experience and everything. So, you know, it hurts to see tracks closing up and being sold off for the land value and stuff, but just evolution, really. I mean, it's the same thing I see here on the coast of North Carolina. You know, there used to be a dozen good fishing piers up and down the coast, and they've gradually shut them down and sold them off because that beachfront property is worth so much, and now, you know, there's maybe half as many or less fishing piers on the coast as there used to be. So, you know, I'd hate to see the same thing happen with short track racing, where the land value becomes so much greater than the entertainment value of what they're producing. I think that's hard on the sport.
And yeah, you don't prime real estate.
You don't see as many new tracks being built and open up as you see the ones that are closing down.
Well, Stephen, I think we've talked about how to fix this before. Well, how we can fix this problem is by bringing NASCAR back to your home track. And we talked about this with the Truck Series, all the different places. You go back and look at racingreferences.com and all the tracks that the Truck Series used to race at. You know, those were not big venues, but there was something going good in racing then, and they really need to go back to that and see if, you know, is it better to have a 10,000 fan venue sold out or 5,000 fans showing up at a racetrack that has a big time light bill.
Yeah, I think NASCAR is kind of, I don't want to say turn their backs, but they've turned away from their roots, the local short track racing scene, to try to promote, grow the three top tier series. But in order to do that and anticipating that growth, they've cut out, you know, the short track racing all around. And the short track racing to me was where it's at. I mean, you know, look at what you see with the trucks at Eldora and what goes on at Martinsville and stuff like that. I mean, that's just good, hard, back-to-basics racing. I mean, you know, the aerodynamics and all that don't come into play as much. So you just get down to...
And some of these facilities
can root it out. They can grind it out lap after lap and be there at the end.
Right.
And I think NASCAR's hurt theirself cutting out the short tracks.
And some of these facilities can handle the load that the Truck Series or the Nationwide Series can bring in. And, you know, even as we turn more toward the dirt, and hopefully some more races will be added there, and maybe even a Nationwide race added to the dirt, maybe it'll open the door for some of these, you know, bigger tracks that are well-known within these communities, similar to Eldora. You know, Kentucky Lake Speedway is one that I come to mind now, but I think that they've already had to close their doors. So, you know, it's facilities like that and the one over in Arizona, they can really hold these guys and the fan base that would come into there. And, you know, Tony Stewart can make money off of selling $2 hot dogs. I bet they could, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one thing that makes Eldora, you know, a popular track, because they don't kill you on the added stuff. It doesn't kill you to buy a beer, to buy a bottle of water, or to buy a hot dog at Eldor. The price is more than reasonable as compared to what it is at some of the other venues that host cup races. It's just they're pricing themselves right out of the ballpark as far as the family of four being able to spend a weekend at the races.
You know, how about seeing a doubleheader at Bowman Gray Stadium? You qualified, you know, you got row one, race one, and then you got race number two, and you put those guys out there and you have a double feature and with both sets of guys, and, you know, two people win at that racetrack. It's these little things that I think NASCAR can do, and they proved that, you know, outside thinking works in this business, and it's made things more interesting. And I think just a little bit more tweaking on it and showing up at a venue like Bowman Gray Stadium, man, I mean, would you not go see that? I mean, they would sell out. You know they would.
Oh, absolutely. They'd fill the stands. And I think if NASCAR would take a long, hard look at it, that would be a way to improve the racing and improve the fan count would be at a lot of these tracks. Pocono is a good example. Instead of running that 400-mile race there in one day and it dragging out in the middle of the race and kind of gets boring, split them up. Run, instead of running a 400-mile race, run a 200-mile race on Saturday for the Cup guys with the trucks or the Xfinity Series as a companion race. And then on Sunday, run the other 200 miles of the Cup race with another companion race, say ARCA. And you get, you end up with a deal. You know, you get full four good races in 2 days for the weekend while you're there. Things are split up so it's not so drawn out. And with the situation of where you're running Xfinity or truck as a companion race on Saturday and then running another Cup race on Sunday, that would limit the number of top-tier drivers that would drop down into the lower series and run those races. I mean, you know, you'd have guys that now might plan to do double duty on a weekend, but faced with doing double duty just in the Cup car, you don't want to overexpose yourself to a problem by running an Xfinity or Truck Series race between those two Cup races. Cup races are what you're paid to run by the sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to look out.
And I see a way to knock out two races at a racetrack, you know, where Pocono has two dates. And I think that there's some, there really is some interest there, which kind of opens the door for. Do you think that there's any way for midweek racing, like showing up in Martinsville and then going to Richmond or Charlotte, you know, at the end of the week where you actually had a Tuesday race, they showed up, they qualified, and they raced all on the same day?
Yeah, I see that, but I don't really see where it's feasible with the amount of equipment and personnel that they bring to the racetrack for a single race now. I think that would just compound it and make things a little bit more difficult, or definitely proud
well,
of
I
the
see
show.
What you're hitting on, and I feel like what you're saying is for the average person to go to the races, it's just too much downtime, not enough event for the people that are there. And adding more to the event and kind of spreading it out a little bit more keeps the fans inside the racetracks buying cheeseburgers instead of out there at their campers, you know, waiting for the big race. think we have too much practice, and qualifying's drug too far out. You know, I love what they've done with qualifying now, but, you know, back in the old day, it was almost, you know, it was nothing exciting about it. And so, you know, they've made a move with that, but I think you're right. There's too much time being spent with cars just going around in circles with no meaning to it. And to add that excitement of two events in the weekend at the same track, I think really has an appealing interest in that.
Well, that's one of the things that sells local short track racing, is the fact you don't have these drawn out long races with, you know, a boring stretch in the middle where nothing's happening. You're looking at running 25 to 50 lap races where you've got a limited number of laps that you can get the job done in, so you got to get out and hustle from the green flag on. I mean, you know, it's constantly in your mind that, well, I don't have but so many laps left to get this done.
Definitely an interesting take there. I'm not going to give up on the upper series, and I think that it dwindles down to the lower series. The upper series has definitely already looked at what's been successful from the short tracks. Heat races have been interesting. And I think that just more time and more development into what they're doing, they're moving in the right direction. And I'll stop anybody from saying that they're not. And, you know, you have to give it to a sport that's willing to listen to the fan. And there's one sport above all of them that listens to the fan, and that's NASCAR. Sometimes they may listen too much, but, you know, it's always nice to see moving forward. I think the chase thing is great. I think what they're missing in each chase is we should be eliminating somebody every race. That gives the suspense of you were here today, you may not be here tomorrow, because each race brings an elimination. I think also if you win while you're in the chase, that should be kind of what brings you all the way to Homestead. If you won at Chicagoland, you should be in at the last race. Because then, I mean, if you've got five or six guys that are, you know, going for the win, the more guys that you have going for a championship on that last race, the more interesting it is. What do you think about that, Steve?
Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely makes it more interesting. And, you know, that's one of the key points of the chase is you don't have the situation we've had before where the championship's already decided before the last race. You know, when you go to Homestead for that race, that there's four drivers that are capable of winning the championship. So it adds, to me, it adds more interest to it, knowing, you know, waiting to see who's going to be the champion, who's going to pull out the victory that day.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that sells the chase to me. You know, you can complain about, you know, the old school way and how it should still be that and everything, but I don't
know.
No,
I think we're fine with where we are now. But like I said, it needs to be tweaked just a little bit, and I'd like to know your take on if you win, you're in. If we're doing it all season long, then do you think it should be relevant at the end of the year?
Yeah, well, definitely so, and you know, to a degree it is. I mean, you look at the Talladega race this weekend, there's, you know, 10 drivers that are looking at, I've got to win to advance. There's no other way around it. Yeah, I might do all right in the points, and I might get in on the points, but in the back of their mind, the drivers know, I got to win to advance. And that's the whole point of the chase, and that's the selling point of the chase, and I think it works great.
Who's going to be the kamikaze driver this year that just, he's down to his last race and he knows he's about to get eliminated? Who's going to make that call to not get gas or keep those four tires on? Who do you think has that best chance, Martin Truex or maybe another driver?
I don't see Martin Truex doing it. I don't. You know, I don't see him having to be in a position where he has to do that. I'm looking more at drivers like Joey Logano and Brad Keselowski. Those are two guys that, when it comes down to it, they've proven that they're going to do whatever it takes to win. Kevin Harvick is another one, but he's already locked in, so that kind of eliminates him. But at the same time, you know, Harvick's wanting to win just to eliminate another driver, to keep another driver from getting a victory in advance. So the Penske bunch and maybe Kyle Busch are the ones I would see that would really go on a balls-to-wall tear at the end to do whatever it takes to win that race.
What do you think is wrong with Denny Hamlin? Do you think it's time for him to move?
Yeah, Hamlin's kind of an up-and-down driver. He's proven he's capable of winning. He's won some big races so far this year, but it's kind of like, you know, if things aren't going his way and he doesn't, you know, they don't improve, they don't adjust. They're just, if they're on, they're on, and if they're not, they're not. They either show up or they don't. So I think they're the weakest link in the JGR chain. I think they're the weak team, and he would be the one I would look to go in favor of a younger driver moving up, but he's locked in with FedEx, so I don't know how much he's really going to move, how much JGR is going to try to move it.
I mean, and look at Hamlin's career. He's had more crew chiefs since Mike Ford. He's had more crew chiefs than I think any other winning driver. And is it a strong area in the – is it kind of the crew chief's responsibility to keep these drivers' mentality focused? Or what do you think is distracting Denny Hamlin? Because I agree, sometimes he's on his game and then other times he's not. Is that a team thing or is that a Denny Hamlin thing?
I think it's a Denny Hamlin thing. I think some days his heart's just not in it, and he's decided early on that he's not in a competitive car that can win the race. And
we've seen this with Junior. You know, when you're beating yourself, you're not going to beat anybody. And they had to refocus, and it took a strong crew chief like Steve Letarte. A lot of times, I kind of wonder if, you know, when these guys keep a crew chief in their first years for a while, and then all of a sudden they have to, you know, get another guy, they've kind of been programmed one way, and then they kind of search for that kind of like, I guess kind of in a relationship type deal. You know, they want to feel closer to their crew chief. After that bonding with their first crew chief, Mike Ford was there for, what, 4 or 5 years? We've seen that with Osborne and Bob Osborne and Carl Edwards as well. Carl's just now kind of getting back focused again. You know, he's on a good ride right now.
Yeah, it's it takes a while to build that trust and friendship and teamwork up, and you have to learn your partner and then to get comfortable with the crew chief, and then that crew chief leaving and you having to go start from scratch again with a new crew chief and build that relationship or anything. I know how difficult that is because of how many times I've been married. I mean, you gotta...
Right. Well, and Denny Hamlin was kind of run through the ranks,
wife,
though.
And you get
he
a broken,
was.
And then she's gone and you gotta get another wife. I mean, I've been through that.
Right. He come in really young, and you know he had kind of minimal experience. I believe he took over the ride from Jason Leffler, just unexpected, you know. So all of a sudden Denny Hamlin was here, and you know he had a lot of success quick, and kind of goes back to Ron Newman. If maybe that's not been a problem for him as well, definitely something to keep our eye on. And you verified it. I mean, that relationship really means something.
Yeah, it does. It's a big part of racing. I mean, the communication factor between the driver and the crew chief is a very big deal. And it's something you've got to have. And right now, you look at some of these organizations that are shuffling crew chiefs back and forth, and then you look at others like Chad Knaus and Jimmy Johnson, and, you know, there's an example there of you build that relationship, you get the two people thinking as one,
right,
and it produces results.
Hey, they can hammer each other and then be right back to business the next week, and they prove that time in, time out. I've heard ridicules on both sides of the fence when it comes to the Chad Knaus and Jimmy Johnson tirade. I mean, they've had times not been too close, but somehow they're able to get it back together. I think that's a real friendship there, though. That's the way that that's that kind of bond that makes you successful. Like you said, it's kind of like a marriage. You kind of feel what that other person is going through, and it would be interesting to see the level of success Jimmy Johnson has if Chad Knaus decides to become the race director at Hendrick Motorsports in the near future.
Yeah, I'd be interested in that too, but that's a whole other can of worms that'll take a whole other show to talk about. So we're about out of time here, so we're not going to get into that tonight. I hate none of our guests were able to make it in, but I enjoyed sitting here talking about it. It's what I do. I like to talk about racing. So while we got some time, Chris, let everybody know what you got going on these days and how they can keep up with you on social media.
That's right. Well, we'll be at Wynot Motorsports Park for the Fall Classic, 22nd Annual Coors Light Fall Classic. It is our last race of the season, guys, so we'll be hanging our racing tires up and putting the old helmet in the closet for the winter time. But make sure that you guys follow us on at Flag of Caution on Twitter, and Chris Creighton, Yellow Caution Flag on Facebook, and be following our updates and all, and can't wait for the next show, Steve.
Yeah, me too. I always enjoy sitting in with you, and I've really enjoyed sitting here talking with you tonight, just giving us a chance, you know, to talk one-on-one and trade ideas and trade thoughts. Glad you could make it in tonight, Chris. I really enjoyed it when you're here. Mr. CJ Sports, how about you? Let everybody know what you got going on. You got things up in the air, new things happening.
One, make sure you guys tune in tomorrow night. Hot Laps with Stats kicks off at 8 o'clock right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. Monday, for those that listen into the 110 Nation Sports Show, we kick off our new 3-hour show starting at 7 p.m. Monday night. So make sure you guys tune in for that. That bumps Revenue's Racing to 6 o'clock, so make sure you guys make that adjustment. And two more things. One, you guys are talking about up-and-coming drivers. We have confirmation this morning that Sam Hornish's daughter, Hope Hornish, will be joining the 110 Nation Sports Show. I'm assuming next week, but here, right in the near future, we'll be putting that out. So we get to have another one of the up-and-coming drivers hitting the airwaves with us here at the 110 Nation. And then also got to make sure that I thank Fit for Life and congratulate them for the new remodel. They, I tell you what, if you guys have not seen pictures, go over to the 110 Nation Sports. The 110 Nation Sports fan page. They are upgrading into a huge gym and upgrading a lot of new things. So make sure you guys check them out. Snafu Seasoning, I-95 Sports Network, and Mile High Radio for help making all this possible.
Definitely. So going to a longer show, that's great to hear. And like CJ said, the other show that we do, Rubbin' is Racing, on Monday nights will now kick off at 6 o'clock. And we'll do an hour. CJ Sports and myself will talk about what's happened the previous weekend in Cup Racing and what we anticipate happening in the upcoming weekend at the next race. So check that out. We're on Spreaker. It's Rubbin' Is Racin' with Mr. CJ Sports and Big Sweat. And as always, you can catch this show, Racin' with Big Sweat, on Thursday nights, 9 o'clock. We're going to bring you some local short track drivers. And like I said earlier, if you know of a driver that deserves a shout-out or some recognition, send me a message and let me know, and we'll definitely get them on. If you also want to keep up with me, check out Twitter. I'm at BigSweat4. They know me as the NASCAR Heartbreaker and Homewrecker. And on Facebook, every day, pretty much I'm on my Facebook group page, NASCAR and Other Racing. We have a lot going on. We cover and we talk about a lot of different types of auto sports. So even if your interest is not in Cup, if you're more interested in World of Outlaws or Formula One or IndyCar or NHRA, if it's got a wheel turning, we're talking about it. So join the group, check us out, and have some good times and learn something. That's NASCAR and Other Racing on Facebook. Well, guys, that's going to about wrap it up for tonight. I haven't got anybody confirmed for next week yet, but we'll get somebody lined up and we'll post show flyers and let you know what's going on. Thank you again for tuning in. Thanks again, Mr. CJ Sports and Chris Yellow Caution Flag Creighton, for hanging out with me and helping me with this show. Glad to have y'all on board.
Thank you.
Y'all have a good evening, folks, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Night.